Hi, this is Mike McNamara, and you're listening to All Marine Radio on your home for it, the one and only All Warrior Radio Network. On a Thursday, it's 4 minutes after the top of the hour. Joining me from Texas is Tim Lynch. Timmy, how you doing? Oops, hold on. Say that again. How are you doing?
I said I'm doing fine, brother. How are you?
I'm all right, man. I don't think I have any real issues this morning, so I think I'm all right. Joining me from Southern California, Jeff Kenny. Jeff, how are you?
I'm good, Mac. How are you guys?
Well, I'm good. Timmy, how are you?
Yep, I hear him fine.
Okay. All right.
Good. I'm okay. You're okay. You need to shave.
Everybody's okay. Want to talk about a friend of ours who passed away, Graydon Crapole, who served. I served with at IOC. I met him across the street, and he's a good friend of Duffy White's. They served together in Hawaii, and he passed away 30 years in the Marine Corps, both active duty and reserve. His wife Greta, nurse in the Navy. She's a big hitter. And while we were down at Quantico, Timmy reminded us she's working, I believe, at the White House complex. And if I'm not mistaken, or he's not mistaken. And then they're both from Michigan, and went back home. And Graydon served on the city council, got elected as a park commissioner, I think, first, and then ultimately to the Ann Arbor City Council. So he lost a long fight that he's waged with Hodgkin's lymphoma, or was it non-Hodgkin's lymphoma?
Non-Hodgkin's.
Non-Hodgkin's. Thoughts, Tim?
Well, I was surprised to hear that Graydon and I have traded comments on Facebook over the years, but I had no idea that he was struggling with that disease. And you know, the first thing I think of with Graydon. Graydon's a big guy, and he was a calm guy. He never got excited about much of anything, and we knew he was gonna probably get out and go into the reserves, because his wife was an Army nurse, is what Greta was in the Army. She was doing very well, but the one time I saw a side of Graydon that probably not many did was during the famous Mike McNamara wiffle ball game when you had the IOC instructors over for a barbecue. Because you stacked the friggin' deck on us, and it was like it was me and Graydon and Barney and the herbivore and Major Allen. And Crapo looks at me and he goes, you know what? He goes, I don't like to lose. And we battled that day. It was hysterical because what I didn't realize, because you didn't know from just watching him, was he was an athlete. I mean, a good athlete, like a really good athlete. And it was funny that day. He also wasn't big on losing something as silly as a wiffle ball game. I stacked
the deck. I thought it was like the second year guys against the first year guys. Like, was that stacked? Were you guys left?
You pulled Kennedy and Killian over on your side. Now you guys were cheating, but it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter.
It fucking matters. Let me tell you. And let me tell you what I remember about that. I don't remember stacking the deck, and normally I would. But what I remember is Major Allen. Who I would tell you, you know, was a runner, and you know, and I mean, like most Marines are, but I wouldn't say relative to hand eye, you know, sports, I don't think that was his thing.
Right.
He hit a fucking home run over my house off Scott Sobka that Scott Sobka still hasn't gotten over.
Oh no, I. That was an epic game.
He crushed it.
Came right down to the wire.
He crushed it.
Yeah. No, it was a hell of a game. And I remember because Graydon's like, we're not losing. Ugh. And it was kind of a surprise because other than that, he just was a pleasant, very competent, really calm guy who would sit and talk politics with me because he was a Democrat and we'd argue for hours about it, but all in good fun. He was pretty sharp. And it's just a damn shame.
No, I remember. I mean, when I think of Graydon, I remember how smart he was, right? And but he was kind of quiet relative to the group. We were as just like we are here. We were there, maybe even more so. Graydon was kind of sit back and listen to most of it, and then. But when he smoked, I mean, he always had. You know, he was a smart guy, and you knew it. You're like, okay, what's he gonna say now? Right, he's gonna blow me out of the water with some comment of something I didn't read or understand. But no, it's bad stuff. Jeff, you were a contemporary of Graydon's there.
Yeah, I turn over most of my packages with him when I first got there. And so I worked with him a lot. And he was already resolved, like you said, to get out of the Marine Corps, you know, going. I don't know if he's going to go in the reserves at that point. But and he was good because do you guys remember that that thing for support we had to do? I can't remember what they called it. It was like it included the EIs and any kind of motor transport.
Oh, yeah.
It was like I just fucked that up all the time. And I get pissed off and throw the shit across the room. And he would, and then I have to go pick it up and everything because it had to get done. But he would do it. He would like do it, and he'd take care of like range control shit. He would, he would see issues coming that I had and take care of it, you know. So and he was very generous guy, you know, for sure. And he was smart. And he's well read and everything. He was and like Timmy said, he was dead calm. I never saw him, you know. We get into arguments over shit like, I don't know, fucking what's better, the FPL or the PDF, and fucking we'd almost come to blows over that shit. And he was always, you know, he took his blood pressure, it'd be 120/80 all the time.
Right. No.
Yeah, and unless you start moving around the foul line on a wiffle ball game, and that will get him going. That was hysterical.
Little did I know. The Sobka's not over that either. Right. And again, the backyard of my house was at the basement level. So to hit it over my house, you hit it over a two story. That's the shot that then made your out. And he had this kind of weird batting stance where his elbows were like at shoulder length, right? His hands were around his, you know, around his pectoral, and then his elbows were really high. And I remember standing there watching, thinking, he's not going to hit anything, man. It's like, nobody hits like that. It's like physically hard. Like you have to be a contortionist to hit like that. And so it was always fun to bring that up to Scott Sobka too, because he's a New Jersey guy. He doesn't like that kind of stuff. So anyway, I want, before we do a little, I got a couple things to ask you, and then we're going to do some role playing today. You guys are going to get a chance to be big time decision makers. But here's a question for you. How did we lose the Philippines, man? And let alone, I mean, not only have we, you know, we seemingly lost the Philippines, but we've lost them to China, for God's sakes. How did that happen?
Well, I think the most obvious, choice that I would guess, the most obvious guess is a personal bribery to the president from China. The Chinese love to bribe people. I mean, they don't bribe in a big way. Like they'll bribe, like when if they want the World Health Organization to do something, they just bribe the head guy. They're sniper bribers. They don't bribe the whole country, you know. That's why we're putting in a lot more money than them. But they're pinpoint, you know. Their stuff goes. So I would say they bribed the guy. He's kind of sketchy anyway, you know.
You know, Duterte. That's what Grant Newsham says. He said,
I
know. Well, it's interesting you say that because, and he said the same thing about the World Health Organization.
Yeah.
You know, when you say, how does that happen? And he starts laughing and he says, they bribed him. When outside the United States and even a lot of places inside the United States, when you see something that doesn't make sense, everybody knows outside the United States, the guy got bribed. He's on the take. How else does the World Cup of Soccer get played in gutter, right?
Yes.
Right? How did it get?
No, that's I don't know. It's insane.
How the fuck did it get to Russia? Oh, that wasn't a rigged bid, was it? Fuck.
Yeah. I just finished reading this book about corruption in boxing, like in the last 120 years, which is very interesting. You know, just for fun, I just read it. And but it goes to that. They find the guy who's susceptible and they bribe him. If you guys remember that movie, Cinderella Man,
right,
about the guy from Jersey who won the heavyweight championship before Joe Louis. That was true. That was clean. But the reason it was clean is because Max Baer, father of Jethro from Beverly Hillbillies, that guy was a fucking honest guy. And he fought, they had this guy that the gangsters put up named Primo Carnera from Italy, from like the Alps of Italy. And he was like an Alp himself. He's like 6'8", huge guy, you know?
Right.
He couldn't dent a bowl of yogurt. You know what I mean? He couldn't fight. So that he had like 38 fixed fights. And he finally gets in against Max Baer, and Max Baer almost beats him to death. And when he went down, the guys who had been setting him up, they didn't even pay for his hospital. They didn't even drive him to a hospital. He was in the hospital for a week. And this guy, Max Baer, came and visited him every day. Now, in the movie, Cinderella Man, Max Baer's kind of a dick. But in reality, the guy was, he wasn't. He was brave, and he was charitable. And it stands in, and I'm going to say it again, Bass Relief to the rest of people in that milieu, because most of them were dirty bastards.
Hey, look, you need to stop this shit, okay? Now you like rolling milieu as well? What's next?
Yes. Yes. Ray Milieu, famous actor from the 40s.
hey, man, right, I'll tell you something about the Philippines, though. And that was while we were there, we had those bases and whatnot. I know we kind of felt like the Philippine people liked us, that we were
they do for God's sakes, right?
Stuff, but it didn't seem like when it was time to go, it was any love lost, because you can't erase the earlier occupation and the way that we've handled things in the past.
Well,
when we think that you're welcome, but you're not.
When we left, right, they stormed the base to pull every copper wire out of every piece of conduit. That was just a profit-making event. So I don't know if that correctly displays public sentiment. You know, I mean, our relationship.
It just didn't seem that way. I mean, you would have thought that the people there, because it sure seemed that we had good relationships with the locals. I mean, the people that lived there and whatnot.
Yeah. You know? Guys remember George Lizaraldi from the basic school?
No.
He was an engineer officer, a little guy.
Yeah.
I went to school with him. He probably came after you left, Mac.
Okay.
He was involved in the tearing down all that stuff, like you say. He married a Filipino girl from a Filipino Catholic school, like college, Gina, and they got a great family and everything. He lives up there in the
Poconos.
Stafford area. Oh. But this guy, he really, I tell you what, he said a mixture of what both you guys are saying. There's a mixture of, heartfelt regret we were leaving, but at the same time, you know, there was some underlying resentment. But I have to tell you, when they went in there and they stole all that shit, I thought that's what was going to happen in Leatherneck, you know, but it didn't. You know, when they went in there and they, like you said,
hold on,
for every piece of wire.
Hold on, for everybody, Leatherneck is in Afghanistan.
Right, it's the main Marine base, right?
So we lost it partly on bribe, partly on, so we had the huge, you know, air base, Clark Air Base, right? And then we had and then we had Subic, you know, the huge naval, you know, naval station at Subic Bay, and now the Philippines are moving towards, you know, China's orbit. How do you say Admiral Stavridis? How do you say his name?
Yes. Yeah.
Stavridis?
Yeah, I can't say
Stavridis?
Stavridis or something.
Yeah. Timmy, you're a Navy guy.
Yeah, no, I think it's Stavridis. He was irritated when he was over in Europe. Because when we were in Afghanistan, I had those AFN things, and he kept on coming on with these damn commercials. He's constantly out there talking about walking around. Has a big old blonde wife and whatnot. They were constantly coming on and chiding people about it. Stop drinking beer and get outside. It was just weird. Anyway, that's what I remember about him.
All right, let me read you two paragraphs at the end of a piece he wrote. And the piece is entitled the U.S. can't afford to lose the Philippines. And it was written in February of this month, of this year. Last two paragraphs. Washington needs to do all it can to keep the communications open in the highest political and military levels and yet not get dragged into Manila's domestic politics. The backup plan, if Duterte follows through with his threat, should be to craft a sort of, quote, visiting forces agreement light, acceptable on both sides. Point out to the Filipino people that drawing closer to China over time will lead to a relationship favoring Beijing, and that the U.S. will not be able to undo, and rely on the deep cultural and historical ties between the two countries. Relations between the U.S. and the Philippines have always been fraught, but this is the biggest crisis since the fall of Ferdinand Marcos in 1986. Washington right. should not allow Duterte to push his people into the arms of China, which can use proximity and a perceived lack of U.S. engagement in ways that America's friends in the Philippines and across the entire South China Sea will come to regret in the decades ahead. Any final thoughts on that? I think pretty accurate, right?
Oh, I would say it's absolutely accurate. It is. And I don't think the Filipino people, once they get a taste of being under the Chinese thumb, are going to be very damn happy. But that's can't say much about that now.
Right. Well, let me tell you, I looked like how much longer is this guy going to be around, right? So he got elected in 2016 when President Trump did. His term is 6 years. And so he's not up for election until 2022. His approval rating is 79%. According to like two or three different articles I've read. So he's not leaving anytime soon. So maybe we just need to pay him more, right?
I mean, that's it.
Out G the G, as Hackworth would say.
This whole thing might be, this might just be, you know, the bribe game, like who pays the guy more? I mean, that's certainly, you know, has happened, you know, like you said, Mac. It's pretty commonplace all over the world, including large parts of the United States.
Right.
And, you know, in Rome, ancient Rome, they used to say, he is most admired, he who will stay bribed. And because that was such a rare thing, because a guy who would stay loyal to the first guy who bribed him was prized. Everybody was taken bribed, but you could unbribe a dude and bribe him yourself, you know?
Right.
It would be a good way to start targeting,
you know, in the Roman thing where Spartacus was out bribed. The pirates who were supposed to evacuate them got out bribed by the Romans, and he ended up trapped there in southern Italy. You know,
interesting. No, I mean, when you look at it, how the Philippines and Turkey, and you know, and this is all deliberately done by the Chinese, right? Because if I can fracture ASEAN, right. And I can push the United States out of the region, then I'm going to win the fight for the first, you know, island chain without ever shooting, which to me is quintessentially Chinese. And Russia's done something similar with Turkey, right? Trying to carve Turkey out of NATO. And
think about the United States, the way we know things. Most of what we know comes from the media. You know, we got and the press is free here.
Right.
It's not free in a lot of other places. So if you were a person who is practical and had access to a lot of money, you would say, I'm going to keep these media people happy and always putting out good stuff about me, and I'm going to bribe selected individuals who could do embarrassing things that would embarrass me and make what I'm saying, you know, show what I'm saying to be lies. So I think that's been a kind of like an epistemology of a lot of presidents.
Let me just tell you, you're one more of those fucking words away from getting thrown off the program, okay?
Epistemology.
You're not going to get their way of doing things. Their way of doing things. You know, they say, hey, look, why should I make deals when I can just bribe selected individuals? And, you know, and this way nothing actually true comes out, and I can continue to function in this fake, you know, gauzy, you know, film of everybody likes me.
Right. Right.
So I think that's a big part.
But again, I mean, look at the consequences, though. You have a guy, and let's just say that that's true, that he's been bribed by the Chinese to tell the Americans to fuck off, mm-hmm. right? And now he's going to take, you know, one of our longest, you know, standing relationships, and he's gonna give that nation to the Chinese, and he's gonna push us out of the region. So I mean, it's amazing that you're watching it.
And you know, you don't have to come right out and bribe the guy so much as if we started focusing our USAID dollars to buttress what we strategically want. Why are we sitting there throwing them all around Africa? When you start talking to Durante about, hey, we've got $100 million, $200 million to spend, we need to do some infrastructure work here. But there you go. I mean, there's ways of doing it without being obnoxious about it, and you know, let the contractors slip them.
Wait a minute,
that's the way it's
bribing.
Supposed to work.
Bribing's obnoxious.
No. I said there's ways of doing this without being obnoxious, as in the ugly Americans invading the area, letting the money do the work for you when we're not even there. And you can let the contractor bribe them. That's what they're for.
Okay. All right. We're still speaking the same language. Okay, next question. Reinstating the CEO of the Roosevelt. Can he be reinstated and everybody else above him, Strike Group, 7th Fleet, and Indo-PACOM, can all those guys stay too? Or does somebody have to be right? If he's right, then they're wrong. Timmy?
Yeah, I don't see how you can reinstate the guy. I don't care if he's right. The mechanism that he used to damn himself, because he did it himself when he sent that email. You can't forgive that. It doesn't matter whether he's right or not. That's not the point. Point is that he shredded the chain of command. And if all those above him are in fact negligent and they were conspiring to do something that was heinously out of line, then yeah, everybody should go. Everybody should go, because that's no bueno either. But no, you can't bring the guy back. I mean, what the guy did was...
But just for the sake of absurd hypothetical discussion, if he is brought back, don't the guys above... That means the guys above him were wrong or were dragging their feet. Shouldn't they be fired?
Oh, that depends,
Matt. Here's another possibility, though.
Wait. That depends on what's important. And goddamn, Matt, we don't want to have diversity become a casualty here. We got to check and see who's above them and make sure we don't have a diversity issue here, because we can't be if anything ruins our diversity, well, that's the end of the world, according to the very many.
Maybe all those guys, between him and the Secretary of the Navy said, hey, look, we don't think you should fire this guy. And he just went ahead and did it anyway. And so they can prove that, because it's, you know, in emails and shit like that.
Yeah, but that means that they were dragging their leg, they were dragging their feet, and that his discontent with what was going on was his discontent with them. Because according to the Secretary of the Navy, he called the dude and said, "Hey, man, whatever you need, we'll do."
Yeah.
I don't think you can bring him back unless like you're that. Bringing him back to let 7th Fleet court-martial.
Yeah.
That'd be the only reason to bring him back.
Well, they could still court martial him. Technically, I think he's still in the employ of 7th Fleet right now, so they don't really need to make him the CEO to court martial him. So interesting.
Yeah, no, but it's the mechanism. It's what he did that's the issue, not that he was right or wrong.
Right. No. Yeah, look, I agree. But you keep reading this and you say, if they did bring him back, then they find validity to – it's hard. I can't even envision this, but I'll say it for the sake of discussion. And if they can fairy dust the letter to the media out and say, well, he really didn't intend it when he sent it to 40 people. He really didn't intend it for it to get outside. And he was a little bit distraught, and we're all compassionate and okay with that. Okay, but
what if they make him the CEO of the Abraham Lincoln?
No, man, that intent stuff, that lack of intent clause only works for presidential Clinton level candidates. Only then can you say, she didn't mean to not store all this classified information on her server in her bathroom. Oh, there wasn't any intent here. Right. Only when the FBI director, you know, publicly whitewashes it, can you do that. I don't think I don't think the captain's rates.
I don't know what the precedent is for Navy people being reinstated after being relieved of command, but I know Army generals, it's pretty common during World War II.
Back in the day, it was.
Yeah.
Well, so, no, that was my point about Patton, right? If it wasn't for Patton getting reinstated and given command again, Band of Brothers is four episodes and ends in Bastogne.
Yeah, and not only him, like Terry Allen,
right?
CG of the Big Red One, he was reinstated. You know, that was that night attack shit we were doing was based on his ideas about how you do a night attack. You know, and so he got reinstated. I mean, lots of them did.
Hey, you know, is there a more interesting and riveting leadership soap opera than the United States Navy? if you're a writer, you could say this. Okay, and then
– we're only seeing the iceberg portion, right? the top portion of the iceberg.
Okay, and then guess what we're going to do? Guess what twist we're going to throw at them this week? What?
Yeah.
We're going to have the Secretary of the Navy calling the captain of a ship, and then he's going to relieve him, and you'll be like, okay, look, it's too fucking far-fetched, okay?
Yeah.
Oh, no, it's not. So
well, and then the Secretary of the Navy, if he gets rid of that one, then he calls the chief of the chow hall in Coronado and fires him for being a Then he fires a Navy CO or Navy recruiting station in Charleston, South Carolina, because the guy needs a haircut. God damn it! You know? No, it's Wuhan. No, so what, motherfucker? You're a naval officer.
Yeah. Okay. Let's do. You guys now have to be decision makers. Okay. So here's decision number one. Each of you is the. Is the three star in charge of the Indo-Pacific Command. Okay? And for the second time in post-Vietnam War history, an American aircraft carrier is going to dock in Da Nang. And what's important about this is there's going to be cultural programs there. You know, we're going to do some military stuff. There's public officials that are going to come down. It's going to be a big deal. And given the fact that we're not so much in the Philippines anymore, right, and we're trying to cultivate strategic relationships in probably one of the most important regions on the planet, you know, relative to peer-to-peer warfare, this is a big deal, okay? And I sent you guys a link that had some, you know, what the Navy did to attempt to mitigate, you know, the coronavirus thing that was in the Philippines, that was in China, that had only been seen in Vietnam, in Hanoi at this time. Timmy, because you're the ranking member of the Navy here. Go ahead, Admiral Lynch.
Yeah, given that we're talking an early March time frame, and with what was known at that time, I would have encouraged the port call. That those things are scheduled long in advance. They're incredibly important. And I mean, not many Americans have gone down to a port and seen an aircraft carrier pulled up in port. It's a big, big, impressive sight. And it's in Vietnam is a critically important potential ally as we reorient against China. I would not have thought that the risk, as I understood him at the time, would have warranted not going.
Right.
Yeah, I would have gone.
Admiral Kenny?
Well, first of all, I would try not to hit the pier when I pull up there.
That's important.
Once the guy pulled up there, I would say, look, man, this is important. Coronavirus be damned. Okay. I'd say, look, this is important. And so I don't want these guys going out there and getting drunk. I don't want that happening with this first port call. So everyone's restricted to, you know, either supervised tours or beer on the pier, and that's it. And now that isn't because of disease spread. That's because of it's the first port call in 50 years. I don't even know if the carriers ever really pulled into Vietnam that much during the war, even. You know, why would you?
Yeah, I don't
think that.
But, you know, on the other hand, I would say that. I would just say, just like, you know, if we're pulling in like Shanghai, you know, back in the whenever we started doing that, after, you know, we started making nice with the Chinese after Nixon's visit, it would have been the same type of approach to it. And just for the same reasons Tim said, this thing is so important, especially in light of the apparent, you know, bribing of president of the Philippines. It's important now that we try and wedge everybody back together. And if nothing else, switch over, you know, our focus to you know, Vietnam, then it's just too important to leave at the whim of, you know, chance.
Yeah, I when I first saw that, I was like, why would they do that? And then as I began to educate myself, you see that, I mean, my opinion, I mean, and it's unanimous that, you know, I would have done the same thing, because that is a hugely important region that the United States has got to be more engaged in, diplomatically, economically. And this is a piece of this, right? This is a piece of this, and you can't get away from it. So, and you know, to include, I mean, the president even said that. Why? What were they doing? You know, what were they doing in Vietnam to begin with? And let me tell you, and that makes me nervous that he would say that, right? Because
that's not a surprise, though.
Right.
But I don't think it takes long to explain to him, because, you know, you're talking about probably the most senior leadership in their military is going to come to that carrier. And they're going to have ceremonies and talks and whatnot, and it's a big friggin' deal.
Well, just the fact that the government would allow it, right? Just the fact that the government would allow it.
Yeah, it's a big deal, and it's an impressive thing to see when you've never seen or been on one before to come on one of those things and get escorted back into the flag area and have coffee and donuts with the admiral. That's a big deal.
Yeah, the blue tile. And you know who cleans the blue tile on all those ships?
Marines.
Well, it used to be Marines when we were on there, because we could wax and clean better than anybody. Now I don't know who does it. Yeah. I mean, you would see Marines like literally fight sailors who were cutting through the blue tile area while it was being cleaned.
Yeah.
I talk about Marines, and I used to go up there and hang out with them and help. Marines in their PT gear, right, on their hands and knees with paper cups full of wax, right, and sponges, and waxing the blue tile area, polishing the brass doorknobs, because that's what went on up in flag country. So,
I have to tell you, my dad and my uncles didn't say Marine. They said seagoing bellhop.
I mean, that was our – I mean, and C school was at MCRD in San Diego. And it was a long storied tradition of Marines going to sea, right, with the Navy. And then the mission evolved to guarding special weapons. And then we got yanked off those boats. But no, you're right. I remember going into Sasebo, Japan, and I can neither confirm nor deny the fact that there was nuclear weapons on board the USS Ranger. And so, but the Japanese are moderately sensitive to nukes for good reasons. And we're out doing flight deck parade as we're coming into the port, and there's these like six ships like strewn across the path that we're supposed to go through to get to the port. Now, for those of you who don't know, you can't rightly throw an aircraft carrier into fucking reverse quickly. Okay. So you're watching it, and there's a submarine in front of us, right? All of a sudden our sub materializes. You're like, whoa, that's cool. And it's in front of us, and these protesters are out there, and they're making noise, and they're banging. You know how the Japanese do, like, group cheers and shit like that? I mean, it's part of their culture. If you ever watch a baseball game, it's crazy. So they're doing that, and all of a sudden these two Japanese, Coast Guard, harbor patrol vessels come up with water cannons. They splash everybody. Right?
Wow.
And they splash everybody, and then they go fish them out of the water, and then we went driving through. And it was. I mean, but I mean, they're gigantic things, and they're the symbols of American, you know, foreign, you know, power projection around the world. And so the other thing is, it's a huge statement to the Chinese by the Vietnamese.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah.
Which is that's right, motherfucker. Here you go.
There's no love lost. There's no love lost.
Right. And so anyway, so all right. So that's decision one. Well, that was easy. You guys didn't even fight over it. Decision two. You guys are each governors of a state. Should we assign you a state, or should you pick a state? Or could it be any state? I think it makes a difference what state you are.
I pick Texas. Right.
You live
that's
in
Texas.
Okay.
One.
All right. No, that's good because it's diverse, right? Okay. So Tim's going to be Texas. Jeff, what are you going to be? You're from Connecticut, right?
Yeah. I guess I could be Connecticut. They'd be in shock, though, if I was. But yeah. I'll go with the nutmeg state.
The nutmegger. Jeff, how would you bring Connecticut out of its hibernation, economic hibernation, physical hibernation?
You know, first thing I'd do is I'd request to, with the hospitals and stuff like that, people who already have been infected and are in extremis, like old people who are dying, to identify where they were, which hospitals and stuff. Then I would say people in risk of ending up like that, i.e. people over the age of 70, people with pre-existing diabetes and other respiratory ailments and cancer and stuff like that. Those people, I would say, we're gonna keep the social distancing on with these folks, the second group of highly at-risk people.
Okay.
Everybody else, I'm going to tell you this. Everyone else, you're going to go back to work, you know, and this is on you. I would say that if you're nervous, business owners, you can restrict the number of people in your places of business to ensure there's enough dispersion to where they're not in danger of spreading it to each other, if that's possible. But if you don't, that's on you. And I say, and then because everything that's been going on is in contravention to the Bill of Rights. And I would like to be, even though I'm from a commie state, Connecticut, I like to be a guy who backs up, you know, the framers who said, you know, Lori saw this cartoon where it shows these framers and George Washington, I think, is saying, now, let me get this straight. This only counts as long as nobody gets sick, like all the first 10 amendments. And so that's why I would do that. I'd say that's how I would do it. I would continue to keep people quarantined who are highly at risk. And most of the people who are dying, not all, but most, are older folks who already have conditions that would curtail their normal lifespan. So I'd say let's isolate those people and keep them safe by not going and breathing. Because I got an idea based on the numbers that your average 25-year-old guy or gal who's otherwise okay goes through this shit and they might get a headache. They might, have a little cough for a while, and then that's it, if anything. So that's what I would do.
Got it. All right. So there you have it. So everybody goes back to work except the at-risk population. They've got to continue doing what they're doing. If you're younger, that means you gotta, you know, telecommute. You gotta work from home until there's a vaccine or some other remedy for this thing that applies to you. Okay, Timmy.
All right, I'm gonna make my proclamation, but before I do that, I want to point something out about the numbers, the numbers of that we've been seeing recently about who's dying or not dying from COVID. Okay. Because recently they've changed the criteria about who counts as a COVID casualty, and you would think that was curious because in New York they doubled the numbers overnight. Now, I want to read to you something that a doctor was talking about that I pulled out of one of his articles, and that is in a hospital, if you admit an elderly patient on Medicare with a bilateral pneumonia diagnosis, you get a DRG payment of $4,600. That's it. That's all you're going to get, regardless of the length of the stay. If that same patient has a COVID-19 diagnosis, it's $13,000. Again, regardless of the length of the stay. If the patient goes on a ventilator, it's $39,000, regardless of the length of stay or outcome of the infection. So there's a little bit of a money thing being involved here with the with the numbers of these COVID patients that are making me leery. Now, having said that, just to keep that in the back of mind, I, as a government of Texas, would move immediately to reopen our economy. And I would say the reason to do this is that it will save more lives than it will cost. There is, yes. We begin our social distancing and isolation to flatten the curve. The curve has been flattened. The medical capacity within the state is at an all-time high. In fact, our hospitals are laying off staff. They're so empty. So we have the capacity to address the infection. If, in fact, it flares up again, I am going to mandate that immediately all high school football practices commence, because we've got a season next fall. And next fall, when the second wave, if this second wave comes, we'll be better prepared to monitor and respond and protect those who are vulnerable without causing the economic reason, because there is no question that the lives lost to an economic catastrophe following an extended shutdown and collapse of the economy will dwarf the numbers of lives lost to COVID-19. And I'm all about saving lives. Boom. There it is.
I'm voting for you, man.
There you go. Yeah.
I told you this was not going to be good, because neither one of them are politicians. Yeah. Well, see, the problem is you guys don't think like politicians, because the politician's first loyalty is to what? His own or her own reelection. And so your approach, I know what you guys are both going to say. I don't give a shit if I get reelected.
Not in this kind of emergency. You're supposed to be above that now. Come on, man.
No, because you can hear.
My heart. I mean, not everybody's Nancy Pelosi.
So,
did you want us to act like what we thought was really going to happen, or what we?
Well, so what happens is we bring in the state task force from Connecticut, right? And then and then the task force leaves, and so now it's Governor Kenny and his political staff, right? His close. You know, his chief of staff, political guy, right? Campaign advisor, blah, blah. Okay, so what do I do? You know, hey, sir, look, if you open this thing, right, and people start
dying,
and people, you're going to be to blame. Their family's going to be used in campaign ads against you, right? And so, yeah, and you can, and they react to that, right? They're going to, and people react
to that. That's what's happening now. You're right. That's what's happening now.
But you're making the bodies for profits argument. And my argument is you're going to get more bodies unless you open it up. Yeah.
I know. But see, here's what, so the question is, so how do we play this? Okay. So here's what we do. We say we're going to slow roll it. And then what we want is we want this ground swelling of nutmeggers coming out, right, with their ascots on. And we want these Rube Ascot wearing assholes that got this shit in New York City. We want them to protest, and then we will acquiesce to, you know, the will of the people and say, you know, based on the overwhelming desire for me to open it, I'm going to modify against my better judgment. And that way we have a fallback position when, you know, Grandma Lynch goes on TV and says, my son should be alive today, but Governor Kenny, that son of a bitch, you know, vote for umptifrats. We got something for that for Grandma Lynch.
Mm-hmm.
So,
well, I'll bribe her.
hey, listen, all I know is I can tolerate this routine we're in for a while, but to give up the NCAA football season, get out. That's bullshit. What are we afraid of here? Come on, man. Yep. It's a virus.
No,
it's a 98%. It's a less than, looks like it's much less than 1% mortality rate. I say no. Let it burn through. And let's football. Come on. Hello. You can't cancel that.
Well, I mean, look at how quick it changes too. I mean, a week ago, was it a week, 10 days ago? You know, the governor of New York is on TV saying, you know, was doing his Chicken Little thing. Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
This is where this is going, and I'm going to need 30. What did he say? 30,000 ventilators? 40,000 ventilators?
That's ridiculous. Yeah.
He's giving them away.
He's giving them away. Yeah.
Yeah. He's sending them elsewhere now. Like what happened? And you know what? And he hasn't been called to task either for his overreaction. You know, to all of this. Right.
No, I mean, the guys used to scalp tickets. Now they scalp ventilators.
You're right.
No, the narrative is being changed as we speak. The media went from calling the president a xenophobe and racist for banning flights from China to he didn't do enough to prepare on a dime.
You didn't do it quick enough.
I mean, on a dime. And now you've got an investigation into why were we in, you're watching them try to rewrite the narrative in real time. And that's and I put a lot of that to Chinese money and influence. Propping that up, but we're not.
I just think it's hate for Trump. It doesn't matter.
And there's plenty of that too. There's plenty of that too. But at this point, it doesn't matter because those that we're going to see the fallout later. I mean, we're right here in the right now, and I think the fastest we get back to work, the better. I mean, I don't see how this goes on. I mean, it's because it's weird.
Like what you'd have to do to stay out of work, it would get more and more like the phenomenon they have in Michigan, where the governor, I think, went way overboard with stupid rules that don't really make sense. Like you can't buy unpainted furniture, you know, in the same store that's selling, you know, chickens and milk and stuff like that. But it just doesn't make sense. And right. So I think what will happen is they'll say, hey, look, you know, not only are we're not making money, but because the government's not taking in any money, we're losing services. You know, I mean, a lot of these checks and everything, they're going to dry up fast because the government doesn't have any money, and they don't have any money.
The damage is incalculable. Yeah.
No, and you know, to me, the question is: okay, so let's just say I own a sporting goods store, all right? And now Home Depot can stay open because it's been deemed essential. So what's going on at Home Depot? Well, what did they do? They put down tape on the ground, right? They put plexiglass between the clerk and the customer, so that the clerk stands in there and all the COVID virus is bouncing off the plexiglass. And then you know they swipe their card, they punch their number in, get handed the receipt, and then they leave. Well, if that's good enough for Home Depot, why am I getting run out of business because I can't do the same thing?
That's exactly right. Exactly what's going on right now.
Well, and the same thing is like it's starting to get nice around the country now. I can't go to the park. I can't go hike on a trail. I can't go to the lake. I can't go to the beach. And so
look at this, Matt.
Oh, hold on. Let me just – I've learned the social distancing piece in all of this, okay? I get it. If I go for a hike, right, when I approach somebody, you know, I can hike my little veil over my nose, okay? And then I'll put it down, and then I'm on my way. New York City says, look, if you can't social distance, you got to wear a mask. Okay, I get that. So I can go to the beach with my daughter, you know, with my daughters, and we can sit there at the beach, and we're 10 feet away from everybody, right? And why can't I do that?
Yeah.
I don't get it.
There's no good reason. There's no good answer.
Well, this is – it's even worse when you think about what would be good if we're trying to protect the people. Now, remember, the social distancing stuff was to flatten the curve, and the curve has been flattened. So that goal is accomplished. That's number one. The medical capacity will not be overwhelmed anywhere outside of New York City. So that's number one.
It wasn't overwhelmed there.
But number two is if we're flattening the curve, knowing that eventually we're going to all get it anyway, that's the assumption. Should we not be increasing our immune system? Because it's pretty obvious that the more healthy your immune system is, the better you're able. This is the fattest metro area in the country, McAllen, Edinburgh, right? And when they first started locking down, you saw the parks. At least people were getting their kids out on the park and the playing benches and stuff. No, I saw no issues with social distancing. There wasn't like tons of people, but the city has progressively. First, they removed the picnic benches. Then they put up barricades around all the playgrounds. Now they've closed the parking lots at the exact time when you should be getting people out of the house. Outside, getting their vitamin E, de-stressing from being cooped up all this time, letting the kids burn energy because it helps their immune system. At the exact, you're forcing people to sit inside passively watching TV, eating shit food, and that's going to suppress their immune system.
That's a good point. That is such a good point. What happens when once we we've lowered our immunity to any kind of infection at all that we normally wouldn't even notice we had. Now we've been like acting like a bunch of basically cowards, you know, huddling in our houses like jackasses in the rain. And we finally go out and, this thing goes and everyone gets sick. And then the excuse will be, well, see, we should have never let you, we should have never let you guys get off of social distancing. It's just stupid. It's stupid and it's cowardly. You know, it's not even going to work.
See, that's the thing that pisses me off too, is stupid, the cowardly thing.
Stupid and cowardly.
Cowardly. That annoys me. Only Jeff and I probably, but I'm with you, Jeff. I hate
to me though, there's the thing that I think you hear discussed the most is how we're going to test for it, you know, and the fact that do we have tests disseminated? So that if it does flare. And so to me, it's not that, and I think here's what people have to understand. It's the same thing with haircuts. Local commanders, it's at their discretion. Okay. And look, if you can't handle this, then how are you going to be responsible for somebody's life in combat? And if you can't do it, then I'll fire your ass. But you should ought to be able. So the same thing with the governor. So is everybody going to come out the same way? Answer, no. Might some counties in some states have to go backwards? Answer, yes. And people should expect that if you do have a huge flare up, right, that gets outside of its banks, then we may have to go backwards. But we're hopeful given. You know, public awareness, giving social distancing, being the prophylactic remedies that we have, right? That we can come out of this, right? And begin to start going to work again and start living again. Now, the biggest challenge comes in the area of restaurants and bars, right? So you can no longer gaggle at those places. You have to have, right, tables. And if a restaurant has 60 tables, maybe when they open up, they can only have 40.
Yeah, but hold on, Mac. Well, no, but those are not businesses that have a lot of a high margin, man. Those are businesses that work on the margin, and you tell a space that it's got a half its number of tables, it may not survive. I mean, most restaurants don't survive.
They'll either break the rules or they won't survive. You hit on testing, Mac, if that testing that should be developed. I mean, that test that shows if you've ever been exposed to it, and if you have, it's not an infection test. It's a test to see if you've been exposed to it. Because I think once we get that out there, we find, hey, there's 70 million people who've been exposed to this thing. Who are they?
You know? And they're doing a bunch of tests right now, randomized tests of populations in order to get a handle on what the true infection rate is. Because we don't know that right now. What we know is what the disease mortality rate is by people who present. So we're going to know that in the future. I think by the fall, you're going to have a much more realistic estimate about how virulent this thing is. And it's obviously much less as far as the morbidity goes, much less than initially predicted, much less. Obviously,
and so the question is, how do you get to the fall, right?
Yeah, I say you lift it all immediately. I'm saying restaurants, bars, just go back to the way things are, and because again, you're going to get an increase in infections, but you're going to get a decrease in overall deaths as compared to trying to string this along for any increased length of time. This is the effects from this shit after the 2008. A financial crisis. That I saw a study recently that said there was an increase like in 255,000 cancer deaths because of people failing to go seek treatment because they had lost their insurance and had no ability to pay to seek the pre-treatment. Something stunning like that. The consequences for economic devastation to human health are enormous, and we've got to start mitigating them.
Well, I think, I mean, to me, you know, there's things that we can do right now for everybody. Like I said, parks and beaches and lakes, you know, those all should be. And I'll tell you what, that all contributes to people's mental health and people's ability to live with this, which is not, you know, which is not that easy.
On the other hand, though, what about the old thing about, hey, look, if you go to a restaurant and there's a lot of people in there, someone in there might give you coronavirus. You go in there at your own risk. And then if nobody goes, you go out of business. If people say, fuck it, I'm not going to worry about this. How about that? You know, like, you got, like, it's on you.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. Because places that cater to people that have a high fear of this stuff, they're probably going to be the higher end places anyway. If you look at how the polling's turning on this stuff, most people like me have no fear of this thing. I've always thought it was completely overblown.
Here's an email.
Just because you get elected to something doesn't mean you're like in an emergency. You become a king. I mean, this emergency ain't even that, you know, isn't even that dire. Like Timmy was just saying. So, I mean,
how can you say that? Because it sounds like you're living in an alternate reality when the world has been shut down like we've never known it. And you say this is not even that threatening. Yet we've never lived through anything like this in our lifetime.
Because you don't know you're shut it down.
You got to look at the numbers. Look at how many people died of this thing. Even with the bullshitting, like Timmy was saying about it, it's just not enough. It's not even more than people who are dying of opioid overdoses. So it's bullshit. I mean, it's not total bullshit. There's sickness out there, and we should identify that, and we should, you know, mitigate it. Like, identify people who are most in risk of dying. But don't be telling people you can't go and you can't operate your business. You can't go here and there because it's my job, because I'm elected, to tell you what's what. Fuck you, pal. The whole idea that Constitution was not to let people use that type of shit as an excuse to put their foot in our ass.
Not to use public health and disease to regulate for the common good.
That's a governmental function now. But let's be perfectly clear. We've got enough evidence now that the predictions made when we started this, when President Trump started this thing with the planes, were wrong. The modeling was wrong. The modeling was dead wrong. I mean, that's how we started to do this. And in the past, we've done quarantines in the past in this country, we've got a long history of civic cooperation when the public understands why and what is happening. We got scared into the why. The why is not evident. It's not self-evident to anybody that these models were remotely correct, but we're getting our balls crushed. And around the country, we've been good with it. I got no issues putting on a mask. Everybody's cooperating with this so far. It's even up, except for Michigan, where they protested as they should. Everybody's cooperating, but it's getting past the point of ridiculousness when you can see right in front of your face with the daily numbers that this thing is on the decline,
right,
and we were wrong.
I think that's absolutely well articulated.
Mostly in Democratic states, massive abuse of power.
Always,
that's exactly what
always in hold on. Let me read you a text message. What about barbers, massage therapists, and like, when do they go back? The professionals that can't social distance.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean,
I don't know, but I look like shit. I need a barber bad.
Yeah. If you say, look, I'm going to take a chance that this barber's okay and get your hair cut, that's on you. I mean, we would have never even crossed the Rockies, you know, in the 1840s if we're so worried about safety. That's on you.
No,
you want to go in there. You want to go in there.
Yeah, but again, that was an individual decision based on my individual life, not a collective decision based on the public health of the nation.
Yeah,
not to get out my X-Acto knife on you, but a little bit different about than conquering the fucking Rockies. Okay, last question for you before we end today. Is China's spin coming unraveled? You know, we don't know how, you know, Americans brought this to China. We're the great Chinese nation, you know, giving masks and ventilators around the world. We're benevolent, you know. Is the Chinese narrative falling apart? It seems when the Washington Post airs out China, right?
Yeah,
something's gone wrong for the Chinese. Jeff, yeah. is it falling apart on them?
Yes, I've been thinking about that, and here's what I think: they're not practiced at lying. They're not good at it.
So they're struggling, and there's a struggle within China itself. You can see it a little bit with some of the press releases. For instance, that first moron who said the U.S. Army started came to Wuhan and brought coronavirus with them.
Mm-hmm.
That's ridiculous on its face. And another Chinese official who's higher ranking said, no, this is stupid. We shouldn't say this. And, you know, basically they're saying, hey, nobody is believing this. And so they're learning how to lie. Usually you have to worry about it because it doesn't matter if you believe them or not in China, you know, because they have total control. But now, and because it was mostly a closed society, they could get away with it. But now it's less closed because of their connections to the internet and stuff like that. They got to get better at telling lies. The best lie is a lie that's mostly truth. Just a crucial part to lie. I mean, they got to take classes from some of our politicians, you know, on how to tell a good lie, because you can see, they're getting better and they will get better. But right now, no one's believing them anymore because they've been exposed as lying about this thing.
I see a role for the Clinton family here in this thing for the Chinese.
Yeah, right. That's the new Clinton Foundation, job is teaching people how to lie. And they did.
Effectively. Not just lie.
Tell the truth slowly.
Effectively lie. And remember the great words of George Costanza, Jerry, it's not a lie if you believe it. When the Washington Post – when the Washington Post comes out and says, not only did it, and it says, this was the, I think we talked about this, but the academic paper published by Chinese, right, researchers that said this thing probably came from the Wuhan, the Wuhan facility, and it was either poor,
I'm trying to keep up with us,
poor hygiene. That infected a human, or in the disposal of one of the animals that was used, it was disposed of improperly and it was transmitted that way. One of those two. Now, but the most interesting thing that I thought that came out of the Post article, if I recall it right, is that they said that the World Health Organization knew this and was complicit because of the bribe that's been paid to that dude, right, in covering this shit up. And that's pretty stunning.
Yeah,
what's interesting was that article by the Chinese that was, I think, written in November, back when they thought that they were still part of the international community and they could say honest scientific things. I think they got their nuts crushed too.
I think it was written in December, but again, it was just an academic thing that said we have to come up with tighter controls on these kind of like type 4, virology research centers that, we have two in the nation, and both in Wuhan, there's got to be. And so it was an academic paper with academic, recommendations saying that this is how this thing probably got going. And then the other thing that I heard, I think, in that story was that the whole Wuhan wet market thing, that was concocted by the Chinese.
Yeah.
Right, to take pressure off the facilities and what went on in the facilities, which is pretty amazing.
So that's suspicious, isn't it?
The virus comes from a horseshoe bat, right?
Yes.
And we know that there's no horseshoe bats near Wuhan, but there are in those facilities. So that certainly says something, doesn't it?
It does.
Yeah. But it's like, why would they go to all that trouble about the wet market if it was just a fuck up in the lab? Unless the lab, that might be the lab's nefarious. Like, let's come up with maybe they did this on purpose.
Well, you could go that route, or you could note that they've arrested Chinese guys in the past for selling lab animals in the wet markets when they weren't supposed to. I mean, I remember reading that when this thing first broke, that they've busted guys in the past for doing that exact thing.
Well, I'll tell you what, here's kind of an interesting thing that's been kicked around. If they didn't do it on purpose, right, tell me that they're not taking notes about the impact that this has in terms of paralysis.
Right.
If we ever do decide to do something, right, might this be the precursor, the next black plague that gets developed to shut down the world and then move against it militarily.
Mm-hmm. Well, if they did, if it was released on purpose, who was the target?
Oh, no, I don't believe it was released on purpose, but I'm saying next time, I mean.
No, but who would be the target, though, in this case? Who would be the target if that was released on purpose? I would say Z, his administration, his control of the party. You can't tell me that one guy has total control over that big ass party.
No, I mean you read stuff that comes out of the region that says he's now under pressure because what they believe is going to happen is that the world is there's going to be a backlash against the Chinese and there's going to be an out-migration of manufacturing that's happening in China and China's going to pay a heavy price for this. So a guy who 6 months ago was increasing his power over China, if you read some of the stuff that comes out of the region, they say, hey, you know, he is at risk relative to this whole thing. And as nations around the world, Italy, to me, you know, Iran, well, they look at China and say, we want to be compensated. You did this. And
they can't admit it. They can't admit this because you're right. That just exactly that. The whole world's going to say, pay up.
Right.
Oh no, they're screwed. There's no way Z survives this. There's not a chance in hell. Really? No way. Because we don't know what the price China's going to pay, but I guarantee you it's going to be damn steep. It's got to be. There's no other way around it.
There's people who like the way things were going the last 25, 30 years in the world, go along the get along type stuff, and you know, bribes here and a little bit of intimidation there. Wars that are being fought that are limited so that it doesn't really mess anything up. And now here comes this guy in 2016 and things are different now. He's got a different go along the get along definition. And there's a lot of people who don't like it in this country and other countries, the biggest one being China.
Oh, no. Let me just tell you, you can quarrel with a lot of Donald Trump, you know, in particular his style, but the world and in particular the United States needed to confront, you know, the fact that China is conducting a charming Cold War on the United States, right? Yes. Their fishing militia, right, is the equivalent of Putin's little green men in the Crimea. It's the same thing. Yeah. And so, but you know, as Grant, you know, as he's come on and says, you know, when you know, when they went into the Paracel Islands and not the Senkaku, but down in the South China Sea, you know, we issued a strongly worded statement. You know, the Chinese, like, so what? What are they going to do? Nothing. Right. And now that we've got Duterte, right, even though the Philippines won, right, in the international court, right, of the law of the sea, the Philippines is doing nothing to have that decision enforced, and they're not taking, you know, China back. Well, why is that? And so, you know, and so that was desperately needed. And so to me, what you see here is a window of opportunity when the world will look at China and say, you got to get back in your fucking box. Right. And I hope it happens. And it can only happen in the collective, because the smaller nations that do that, China will blackmail them economically and they'll say, OK, fuck you, Italy. You will no longer sell into this market of 1.3 billion people. Right. Mm-hmm. You're going to get your ass booted out of office. The Italian economy, which sucks anyway, is going to suck even more. And the quality of life for Italians is going to get worse because everything they cost is going to go up more. So you can buy from the EU. So fuck you. And so if it's not done collectively, that's the way the Chinese do it. Right. And so that's why to me, and I think that opens the door for us to create and I know the president likes bilateral agreements, but he needs to create a very good bilateral agreement with Vietnam, with Malaysia, with Indonesia and the Philippines. And and again, that then allows us to go back into the Marine Corps and the pivot to the Pacific to fight in a permissive environment. And if we have our little green men, right, doing training exercise with the Philippine Marines, right, and looking at the Chinese in the face in the South China Sea, there's nothing the Chinese can do about that. They're yeah. trapped against their mainland, and they know
especially
it.
If we got in with the Vietnamese too.
Right.
Hey,
right.
Hey, there's no better time. If there was a time in the world to do that, it is now in response to this damn virus. Because China, 12 months from now, China is not going to be the same, brother. It's not going to be anywhere near the same. It's going to be fascinating to see how this plays out.
Well, I hope, and again, the world needs, the free nations of the world in particular, need to act in concert. Because like I said, you know, China's specialty is let me get you hooked on my crack, which is your rising economy as I allow your manufacturers to sell into my country. And once I got you hooked on that crack, right, then you're my bitch. You're going to do anything the fuck I want because I'll throw you out of office. I'll throw your economy into a depression, you know, and whatnot. And so, as Timmy said, I mean, this is that window of opportunity. I hope the world seizes it to make China become and again, what's at stake here is the post-World War II, right, rules-based order that the United States, right, and Great Britain established in the wake of World War II. That needs to continue. It doesn't need to be – the world doesn't need to be China's dancing chicken.
And that's right. And listen, did you guys realize – did you guys read about like the – they're throwing – in China, they're throwing black people out of McDonald's, you know, black
patriots. Yeah, I did.
It's like, what the fuck?
I'm like, what? Unless that's a manifestation of the fact that they're trying to focus some kind of rage in their people on something that's not Chinese government. So they're saying, yeah, they're letting it go that, like, yeah, black people. And I mean, I'm looking at them like, why the fuck is there that many of them over there anyway? And I mean, you know, I mean, why would they? Of all places, you know, you always hear that China is the most racist society in the world. I guess so. You know what I mean? What's the point, though?
Well, if you look at the sign, it's somebody took a picture of one of the signs on the door. Notice, we've been informed that from now on, black people are not allowed to enter the restaurant. For the sake of your health, consciously notify the local police for medical isolation. Please understand the nature of our request. Like, what? Right?
Yeah.
But let me just tell you, Asian people.
I talked to Lori. Lori said it's a red herring. The you know what I mean? It's like just something to get. You know, their focus off, you know, the screw ups that they've been making. If that's the case, then maybe they got more internal problems than we know. I mean, Timmy kind of said it when he said, you know, there's no way that Z can get through this.
Well, would you link the supposedly they're testing nukes? Would you, is that another attention gainer? Don't look at this. Look at the shiny object.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I would say that makes sense though.
Yeah.
I mean, if it was scheduled to test nukes, I'd postpone them just so I wouldn't look desperate right now. That's a desperation move, man. They got problems. They've got huge problems. And just like us, they've got no idea when the hammer's going to drop or how long this is going to go. They don't know.
Well,
they're in a bad spot.
The next part is going to destabilize. It's interesting because it's kind of similar effects. You know, you're seeing in Iran, right, is the people are rip shit about that. You know, they got told by the Ayatollah, you know, Khomeini that, you know, our faith is stronger than this virus and shit like that at the start. And now they're just getting right. I mean, they're just getting annihilated. And so and they've run out of that regime has run out of capital with the people of Iran. And so it'll be interesting. Yeah. You read more and more people writing about regime change and that they're not opposed to, you know, something, a conservative Islamic government, but they don't want it to be caveman economics, right, and caveman Islam. And then the thing with the Chinese to me that was interesting is there's going to be subsequent waves as, you know, the world's economy goes down and there isn't demand for their factory work. And then those people are thrown out of work. And so the economic waves that are going to hit China, you know, if you're, you know, that reliant on manufacturing and all the things they do to make that happen is not going to work out well. And so you're going to see tough times ahead for them. We're going to see what they're made out of. So interesting, interesting stuff. All right, boys, any final thoughts?
I'm thought out, man.
Yeah, it's a lot of pressure being a governor, especially of the especially of the Nutmeg State.
I know, and I think I'm going to get beat in the re-election. I don't think I'm going to win.
By Kennedy.
Look, but me and him will split things, you know?
There you go. We'll carve things up like true politicians. All right.
He can have West Hartford, and I'll have the rest of the state. I'll have the shitty part of the state, which is like the rest of it. You know?
All right, Timmy.
I'm in charge of Bridgeport, New Haven. Hoorah.
Timmy, final thought?
You know what I failed to do was to get to a book I wanted to talk about, No Tougher Duty, No Greater Honor.
Oh, yeah.
Honor. It's about a memoir of a mortuary affairs marine, a gunnery sergeant. And I think maybe we'll just wait until next week and try that again, huh?
All right. Yep. No, we could do that. We could do that. Yeah. All right, boys. First of all, good stuff today. Thank you for your intellectual input. And again, our thoughts and prayers go out to Greta Krapel and their daughter, our friend and comrade Graydon Krapel, who we were captains with, passed away this week. So God bless them, and thanks, boys, for the visit.
Yeah, thank you, Matt.
There you have it. Thanks. All right, there you have it. Another episode of the Lynch and Kenny event, right here on All Marine Radio. I like the role-playing thing, man. It's kind of interesting. Let me get to a couple emails. Here's one. I listen on a regular basis. And in addition to being very humorous, this segment waxes between intellectual brilliance and stupidity, which also appeals to me. Period. Don't judge me either. However, today was pretty amazing. You guys covered a variety of topics, and they all seemed to weave back into each other. The Roosevelt linked to engagement in the South China Sea linked to the Marine Corps pivot to the Pacific. Holy shit. The need to get the Philippine Islands back, or at least get that thing to neutral, linked to those same events. And then I enjoyed the role making too. Have a great weekend. Enjoy the program. And I learned something today. I swear to God I did. Nice. Here's a text message. There's a protest scheduled for Boise tomorrow. This is from Montana Man. I said, are you going? He said, not to Boise. I am getting a haircut, though. Well done. Well done. One more text message. Well done today, boys. One of your best episodes ever. And I'm not kidding about that. Your range of knowledge, all three of you, shows you all to be intellectually interested human beings, and it comes out in between your bits of humor. It's why I listen. Semper Fidelis. Yeah, Semper Fidelis. All right, if you're just tuning in hour one, what you're going to hear is a discussion about how did we lose the Philippines, right, to China, for God's sakes. And so you can hear, again, Duterte, six-year term as president, he's got a 79% approval rating in the Philippines. So he's not leaving anytime soon. By all accounts, he's in China's pocket. And so you're going to see a video by a guy that was on CNBC talking about the effect of the Philippines no longer being a strong member of ASEAN, Association of Southeast Asian Nations, that's what ASEAN stands for, and the impact on the rest of the group's power in the region, right? And then we're going to talk about that relative to the importance of the Theodore Roosevelt's visit in early March to Vietnam. And then I talked about Governor Cuomo and his Chicken Little thing. Like, the next time we go through this pandemic shit, don't put guys like that on TV. And he should know better than to do the Chicken Little shit. Everything he said, most of what he said, did not come to pass. And yet he was on as the governor of the state, right, that has New York City in it. And he's panicking the rest of the nation, telling the nation, this is coming to your city. No, it's not. So, and I'm not even going to get after him for why was it so prevalent in New York City? Why were you guys so slow on the trigger? Don't you know anything about anything? So, anyway. So you'll hear that on a Thursday. Have a great day. All Marine Radio is over and out.